the sweet spot for us has been buying assets, working those assets, stabilizing those assets, repositioning, pulling out the equity, crystallizing the equity, putting into the next deal, and letting that deal work over time.
Yeah.
And once you do that, that cash flow snowball begins to become serious, become real.
Are you ready to transform your life? This is a no-nonsense show helping immigrants like you create generational wealth, even while working full-time. Get ready to take notes. Here's your host, Saket Jain.
Welcome back, my Great to Wealth listeners. Today, I have the pleasure to introduce to you one of my unofficial mentors, Gino Barbero. When I was getting starting out in multifamily, kind of what do I want to do in the finance world, getting the sense of the whole world, I binged on Jake and Gino's videos a lot. I think my kids may have remembered their names at the back then. Now they may have forgotten them. But I'm like, who are these guys? So I am very delighted to bring to you Gino Barbero, who has done an amazing job. They've built a great community with the work they do. And they're very focused right now on multifamily. I thought it'd be a great time as we're thinking about what's going to happen in multifamily going forward. Better to speak to somebody who's basically made their focus, that asset class as their primary focus going forward. So Gino, with that introduction, which I didn't introduce you much, which is intentional, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Saket. How are you doing this morning?
I'm good, buddy. Thank you. Thank you. Gino, one question we always launch off the show with, what does the word migrate to wealth mean to you?
Well, as we had mentioned yesterday, I had met you briefly yesterday, and we were really talking about that word wealth, and I had a little bit of time to think about it and really to ponder it, because as I had said to you, wealth to me in my 20s is completely different than to myself in my 50s.
Right.
When I was younger and I had starting out a business, all I was looking to do is just to make some extra cash every week. Wasn't really thinking long term.
Yeah.
When I got married and I started having kids, then all of a sudden I started thinking about their future. How am I going to provide for them? Hmm. How does that wealth look like? And then as I got into my 40s, I realized I'm not wealthy at all. And to me, wealth at that time was multiple streams of revenue. Because I think back in the 90s and early 2000s, you could do rather well with one or maybe two streams of revenue.
Definitely.
You didn't need a side hustle. I think nowadays it's become more and more incumbent upon us to be able to create wealth, but you can't do it with one or two forms of revenue. I'm sorry, it's very difficult. A high-paying job, taxes, and your money's not working hard for you. So wealth, to me, I think ultimately is earning money from a W-2, let that W-2 buy your apartments or buy your investments, and let your investments fund your lifestyle. If your money's not working hard for you, that's a challenge. You're never, I think, to me, really going to create true wealth. And that's what I didn't understand in my 20s and my 30s. I was working really hard for my money. I was in the restaurant business. I'm working 50 hours a week.
Oh, that's a hard business to begin with, man. That's a hard business.
Yes. And so ultimately, are you working hard for your money? Which I hope you are, because then that'll translate into really good skills and really good habits. But then ultimately, you need to figure out a way for your money to start working hard for you.
Gino, I love what you said there. A few things there to talk about. One is just because you're investing doesn't mean you can't, you don't have to work hard. Like there's a whole concept of leave your W-2 today because there's a greener pasture outside somewhere else. That path is good for some. In my own personal journey, it's not for everyone because business is not easy either. You're going to be working hard there as well, right? So you have to leave for the right reasons. As long as the reason is right, the reason is leaving is fine. But what I really loved about what you said was make a lot of money, but don't just spend it on liabilities. Buy an asset, in your case, multifamily, or in somebody else's case, it could be another thing. Mm-hmm. And let the cash flow from the assets pay for your lifestyle. Mm-hmm. Now you're golden, mm-hmm. right? Because, and hopefully there's some buffer built into it because everything goes up and down. So if you need $100 and you get $100 and you quit working, don't do that. the goal is going to be continue to work hard.
Yes.
Now that you have tasted blood, continue to grow this asset class because this is going to feed you for the rest of your life. A job or a business may not. Any thoughts on that, Gina?
Yes, Saket. I think when I understood the difference between the middle class mindset and the wealthy mindset, everything changed for me. As the middle class, we're taught to save for an event. Let me save for college. Let me save for retirement. Let me save for a kid's wedding. Whereas a wealthy person saves money to buy an asset to pay for that event. Oh, my first deal back in 2013, it was a 25-unit deal with Jake. I still own that asset. It's me, my brother, and my business partner, Jake. There's three of us in that deal. That deal today has been producing $8,000 per month in cash flow, probably for the last 4 or 5 years, consistently. Wow. We've owned it for, you know, almost over 11 years. Now, my share is between $2 and $2,500 per month.
Sure.
Well, my first daughter went to college, graduated 2 years ago. My son's graduating this year. That one asset has paid for both of their colleges. I still have
four. Oh, my God. And you still have the asset. You still have the asset.
I still have the asset. It's still producing cash flow. The residents are paying down the mortgage. I'm getting principal pay down. I still have the tax benefits from the asset. I still have the appreciation from the asset. I think when we retire, we don't have a net worth problem. We have a cash flow problem. So I think if you can start looking for assets that cash flow for you, that cash flow can build a really great lifestyle for you.
Love that, Gina. And thank you. Thank you for reiterating that. I think it's very powerful. Another thing I want to talk to you about is you mentioned multiple streams of revenue. I wanted to ask you, you know, most people say multiple streams of income. Was that intentional that you use multiple streams of revenue versus multiple streams of income? Or in your mind, income and revenue are, when you're saying that context, it was synonymous?
It's a great question. Revenue is vanity, profit margin is sanity, and cash is king.
I love that. Let's repeat that, Gina.
So revenue is vanity, profit margin is sanity, and cash is king. One of our biggest metrics for myself, my business partner, Jake, in multifamily is PPU, profit per unit. I don't care how much a unit is grossing. I really care how much it is actually profiting. And we target between $200 and $300 profit per unit in our market. Every market's going to be different. Right. But if you talk to 100 investors in multifamily, 99 of them will not know what you're talking about. No one uses the metric.
No.
And I was actually speaking to Frank Gallinelli yesterday on a podcast. He was on our podcast. Frank Gallinelli's been investing since the 70s. He didn't really even know that metric. He's like, oh, you're a numbers guy. You obviously can see where your property is performing. So for me, when I said revenue, you are absolutely right. It should be income. But when you're thinking about different revenue streams, some revenue streams may not produce income, but you may be building that revenue stream
to
build a business and flip that business. So that's one way. When we started out, our very first investment was our very first income stream. Then the next one was our property management, because Jake started managing the properties day to day. Now, that may not be a quote unquote big income stream, because property management is not making a lot of money. But at the same time, you're controlling the asset. Then from there, we start the Jake and Gino Education, which is another revenue stream, income stream. Then we start the syndication company, which is another income stream. And you can see all these streams have one thing in common, though. They all lead back to multifamily. And you can do this in any business. Let's take the restaurant, for instance. My restaurant business has a physical location. All of a sudden, I start selling physical products. I start writing cookbooks.
Yeah.
I start doing educational videos. I get food trucks. I start doing backyard barbecues. And you see what happens if you start thinking it from that perspective. You want your core business to be strong. But in this day and age, that one restaurant is not going to feed my family, unfortunately. And you have the ability nowadays to build an amazing and unique brand. And from there, start thinking about how you can start building out multiple streams. The only unfortunate thing is that it's very difficult to do by yourself because there's so many things. That's why it's Jake and Gino. I don't mind splitting the pie because that pie is a lot bigger with Jake and Gino than it is just with Gino by himself.
Gino, where did you find Jake? Because I think one of the things we talk about a lot within my community is partnerships are even more important than marriage.
Yes.
Because in a marriage, you and your family may be the only one suffering. But when you have partnerships, they're your employees, your investors, they're ancillary damage that gets done. So you have to be really, really, you can pick and choose the spouse the way you want to or a partner the way you want to. But when you talk about business partner, you have to be extra careful. So I know you and Jake go way back, at least in terms of the business. How did you guys meet? How did you figure out there's a partnership opportunity? Can we talk a little bit about that?
Absolutely. I want everyone to write these words down because this, to me, is what has separated our partnership from other ones that I've had that have gone bad. Mm-hmm. It's called values-based decision-making. One of my mentors, Rick Sapio, really drilled that into my head. Every time you make a decision, base it upon your values. Now, most of us don't even know what our values are. We're living unconsciously. Yeah. And if you don't know the values, I have a little, I guess, test for anybody out there. Go back into your childhood between the ages of 9 and 13, 9 and 14. Think of a story that really resonates with you. But also, think of three words that you really hold yourself dear to, three words that you really live to. And when someone told me that, I sat down for a couple of seconds and I said, dedicated, committed, and hardworking. Those are the three values that really resonated with me. And for myself, I'm like, my father taught me that. I was in the restaurant.
Right.
Those are the three words that resonate with me. So if you're listening to this, do this little example. What are the three words for you? And ironically enough, when I met Jake back in 2009, he was a pharmaceutical rep. He, I think, embodied all three of those. He was a hardworking young guy coming into the restaurant, going to doctor's offices, catering food from our restaurant and selling pharmaceuticals to them. Yeah. And I saw how hardworking he was. He was always prepared. He looked professional. He was dedicated to what he wanted to do. And he was always grinding it out. And we just met. We got to know each other. And in 2011, he moved down to Knoxville. And when I partnered with him down there, I said, Jake, it's going to take some time. I know what, well, quote unquote, out of the two of us, I had a lot more experience. I had gone through mentorships. I had gone through training. I had made all of the mistakes. He was a young newbie. I said, let's look for deals. It took us 18 months to find the first deal. Hmm. And now partnerships, you go on a partnership, you know, deal by deal basis. You see how the first one goes. Set clear expectations. And if you're not willing to work hard for your partner and we say to ourselves, you're going to struggle. You're going to give up time. You're going to do the things that you don't want to do, but you got to do them for your partner. And if you're not willing to, then let me tell you something, that partnership is not going to work.
Yeah. And I think that's beautiful. But I think one of the few things there is take it slow.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Oh, yes. Just because you met your potential future partner, don't have a co-branding from day one.
Yes.
Test it out. Go on dates. And when we talk about business partnership, go on dates would mean business, do deals together. See how it goes. Were you expecting the lift you were expecting? And to be honest, if your partner is not lifting their weight on one deal, chances are they're not going to lift their weight going forward.
Yes.
Period.
And Saket, let me just add to that. We were both aligned. We both wanted multifamily, and to this day, we haven't veered off. Cryptocurrency, as we speak, is blowing up right now.
Yeah.
We haven't gone to crypto. Crypto's the 60,000. We're not investing in crypto. We've stayed aligned. We're both family men. We're both men of faith. We tend to be a little bit more conservative. That's who we are, and that's how we align. And you know what? I go to Jake's house 3 to 4 times a year. He's got an amazing family. His wife puts me up. I go into the house. I open up the fridge. She's got my organic half and half for my coffee.
So there you go, man. Yeah. Well,
and that's what you want from a partner. Your partner is actually out there and you are aligned in your values and the vision. Because if Jake wanted to fix and flip and I wanted to hold long term, we could be the best of buddies, but that partnership is not going to work long term.
Yeah. No, I agree. I agree because I think all the wheels in the car have to point in the same direction.
Mm-hmm.
Just because you have four wheels doesn't mean, but if they're going in different direction, it's going to be a very jazzy ride and a bumpy ride.
Yes.
You may end up going somewhere, but may not be the direction you wanted to go.
Mm-hmm.
Love this conversation, man. Let's go deeper into multifamily. Now, especially nowadays, you know, any investor that you talk to or anybody you're talking to, they have heard about foreclosures because negative news travels much faster than the positive news. And the negative news is taken out of context. It's not sometimes not even within context because what happened in some of the foreclosed deals were bad operator, not the asset class was bad. And I know that gentleman fairly well. So I know what exactly happened there. So when you're looking forward, especially as you're working in your coaching program, your education business, and your own purchases and everything else, how are you looking at the projection for multifamily? Is it good time? Is it going to go down? And I know you don't have a crystal ball, and I don't expect you to have a crystal ball. We're asking for your opinion.
So one thing I've seen soccer in the last 15 years that's changed since I started, I think there are a lot more people in the business than there were. Yeah. Because like I said, more people need a side hustle, and they see multifamily as that vehicle that has all these amazing benefits.
Yeah.
Unfortunately for them, I had life before Jake where I made all of my mistakes, and then I had life after Jake. And the difference between the two was I didn't have the map or the process, which we call buy right, manage right, and finance right. We call that the wheelbarrow profit strategy. The two back legs of that wheelbarrow are buy right and finance right. They're fixed. Mm. If they're not fixed and one of them is bad, like operators not buying the property or overpaying, or what we've seen in the last 2 to 3 years, bridge debt. Short-term debt that's at a low interest rate that all of a sudden 2 years expires, so that finance right leg comes out and the wheelbarrow will tip off. And the most important one, in my opinion, is the manage right, the wheel of the wheelbarrow. You know, operators got in, they didn't have a lot of experience, they thought of it as passive when in reality it can be passive, but there still has to be somebody at the wheel. Jake always jokes around by saying, hey, you have a kid, you need to raise the child. Business and investing in real estate is the same way.
Very true.
And what I don't like about what we've seen in the last 3 or 4 years in the space, and this is just because of function of the market cycle and low interest rates, we've had a lot of speculation. And it's okay. It's like people come in, they buy an asset, they don't look for projected cash flow because they're going to sell the asset in the next 18 months. Well, that train has stopped, and now people only have one tool in the toolbox, which is the tool of syndication to raise money. They don't know how to operate deals. They don't know how to joint venture. They don't know how to use creative financing. They're what we call a one-trick pony. So for me, going forward, to answer your question, I think it's an amazing asset because it's a basic human need. It's food, clothing, and apartments. There is some resiliency in the market, in the cycle, because people always need a place to live. Now, shorter term, rents may drop. But if you're looking at demographics, there's not a lot of single family homes out there for sale. It's still cheaper to rent than it is to buy a home. And that's undeniable. And if you're a 31-year-old, are you buying a home for $400,000, or are you going to go rent an apartment for $1,800? Because next year, you may have to relocate, or you may just want to leave somewhere. So, you know, family formation is getting pushed out later. We have baby boomers that are selling and wanting to rent. So for us, longer term, if you're in the right markets, where I would say being in the Southeast, being where there's population growth, being where there's job growth, long term, I think it's an amazing asset class.
So Gino, how do you finance right? So a buy right, I think I'm assuming it's really about making sure you have the right criteria to buy it, right?
Hey, music to my ears. No one ever talks about that. When I was at an event last year, at a Dan Hanford event with hundreds of high-level syndicators, I said, anybody out there have a buy right criteria? It was like deer in the headlights. They didn't know what we were talking about. Can you tell me the asset class? The vintage, is it brick, median income, number of units, amenities? Let's get really townhomes, two bedrooms. Right. And that's really important, the buy right. But when you're talking right now, finance right, it's been very challenging because over the last 2 years, prices have gone up. Yeah. What people are buying on stabilized deals, you know, Fannie and Freddie, you can't get that type of debt because the prices just skyrocketed.
Correct.
And part of the problem was, there's two ways you really go bankrupt in real estate, to me. This is the two biggest ways. You either run out of capital, which people are doing because their CapEx budgets are underfunded, or you run out of time. And that's what's going on with bridge financing. If you put yourself under time constraints, there's a lot of risk. Because listen, I don't even blame them for it, because when you're going through COVID and it's taking you 6 months to find windows and it's taking you time, not enough labor, you're under the gun. So for us, we've used something called loan to cost. We've used credit unions and community banks where terms are longer. Now, the downside is it's recourse debt, whereas this bridge financing was non-recourse. But I would sign personally guarantees on the bridge debt and on the loan to cost and just not involve my LPs. I would do that instead of getting that bridge financing, because bridge financing, there's so many caveats to it. It's so expensive, and it can be
Like I said, after 24 months, all of a sudden rates went from 3.5 to 8%, 9%, and your debt coverage ratio is not done because you thought rents were going to continue to rise at 10 or 15%, where all of a sudden they've completely slowed down. So when you're looking at financing, right, you need to understand what your exit strategy is, because a lot of these operators came in there wanting to value add and wanting to flip these assets. And to me, doing all that work, putting all that effort in to get a paycheck, which is nothing wrong with it, but I think there's too much work involved in that just to flip a deal.
No, I agree, Gino. So I think a few things there, Gino. Let's go deeper into that. So, you know, model for a syndicator is very simple. A syndicator, especially if you're raising capital, I would say 95 to 99% of the syndicators are following this model. They are driven to return the money to the, with hopefully increased money to the investors in the shortest amount possible so that they can rinse and repeat that model.
Yes.
That's just the model is. So their whole time were 2 to 5 years. Now it's 5 to 7 years because 3 to 5 was not realistic because everyone was, I mean, I was at a Grand Cardone event. And I remember him saying that, that voice has stayed in my head, that don't worry about buying right, the time will heal all the mistakes. I'm like, oh my God. And I'm not saying Grant was right or Grant was wrong. That's just not, that didn't seem there's a lot of longevity in that, right? Because if you're hoping for a mistake to be fixed by time, to your point, you may run out of time.
That's a wish.
If you hold it long enough, you're right.
Yeah.
If you hold for 20, 30, 40 years, time will cover all your mistakes.
Yes.
But you have to be able to hold it for that long, right?
Yes.
So when you're going forward now, as you said that in your case, you're also a syndicator. When you raise capital, how do you tell people that we're going to be potentially holding the asset longer because we want to reap the benefits on a long term rather than flipping it within 3 to 5 years? Or are you keeping them different?
Yeah, if you're in the syndication space, we've just sold out on our third and final syndication. But for anyone who's syndicating deals, we have coaches in our community that start off with syndication because they don't have the capital for themselves. And now what they're doing when they're exiting deals, they're joint venturing on smaller deals, 20, 30 unit deals. And it's like, dude, I own this asset with one or two other people. The equity is all mine. They're doing both. There's nothing wrong with doing both. But if you're in the syndication space, maybe you consider to yourself, and I understand why they do that, because the fees and the IRR for the general partners are tremendous. They are very alluring. But I will tell you, I've interviewed hundreds of people. One gentleman comes to mind. His name is Sam Freshman. Huge syndicator. The guy's, I think, in his 90s now. He said the biggest mistakes that he made in his career, and this is a guy who's been doing it for 60 years, not buying enough, and selling,
not keeping
too
them enough. Yeah.
Yes. So I would challenge anybody who is a syndicator, if you want to continue to hold these assets a little longer, IRR is obviously going to go down as you hold them longer. But what I would say is look to buy assets that you can refinance out, give your investors all of their capital back, have them in the deal with very little capital, and continue to let the deal cash flow. That may be one caveat. The second one is you need to have what I would say is come to a Jesus moment. Do you want to have investors with that long-term mindset? Some investors don't have it, and it's okay. Yeah. If that's the model you want, let them know I am a more of a long-term investor, and let me tell you why. You need to explain to them why owning real estate for the long-term is a benefit for you and for them, especially if they have money in an IRA that they're not going to touch for the next 15 years.
Correct.
Why do you want to keep churning and burning it? You can be honest with them and say, hey, it benefits me more than anyone else because I'm going to get a fee on the next deal and the next deal and the next deal. But if I've got this amazing asset that's a newer asset that I can hold for the next 15 years, that I can stabilize, that I love the rent growth in the market, that I know that I can refinance and give back a lot of your capital, and then you're in this deal with very little risk, how does that sound? That's how I would approach it. And that's how we did it ourselves. It's just that we didn't want to be in those markets that we had those assets anymore. We wanted to go back to Tennessee or else we would have refinanced those deals, given the capital back to the limited partners, gotten some for ourselves, stabilized the asset, and then continued the cash flow.
Great, great. I think love that. I'm doing both. I'm doing all three, actually. Single deals by myself, JV, and the syndication. I can see the benefit. I think there's good in all of them.
Yes.
I'm not saying one is better than the other. I think it's what are you optimizing it for? When I'm going all alone, it's an asset for my kids. Right? I know that for sure. That's theirs. I'm not going to touch it. That's for them. And hopefully they know how to respect it. That's my job. to try to teach them. But the second with the JV is that now you're adding some leverage to it because you're bringing other partners, but you're still keeping the pie for yourself and yes. them. You don't have to worry about 12% IRR, 8% cash on cash. You don't have to justify a purchase because you have to convince an investor. You have to justify yourself and your JV partner to do that. I love that. And syndication world is very different. I think it's a transaction oriented, right?
Yes. Like
in this transaction, come in with me, you're going to make X, Y, and Z. And my goal is to exit ASAP. Yes. Whatever that meant. It meant 2 years before, it meant 7 years now.
But Saket, let me ask you a question. Is that investing or is that, would you say, speculating? Because to me, it sounds like a fix and flip model of 2 to 5 years, and you're trying to time the market. You can always buy real estate in any part of the market cycle. You can't always sell it. And I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I'm just playing devil's advocate for anybody out there. Because if you do have a 25-unit deal and you have a 200-unit deal that's syndicated, well, that 25-unit deal can use a lot of the resources that your syndicated deal can use. So you can really profit really well with the smaller
100%.
Deal you're doing yourself.
100%. And I would say that I think, you know, it's how you position it. I like your idea of infinite return. I think Ken McElroy calls it infinite returns. Borrowing his term, it's really that's when it still stays as investing, right? Mm-hmm. Because now you're saying that I'm going to keep the asset, I'm going to refine, I'm going to add the value to it, but I'm going to reap the benefit right away. I'm going to reduce your principal, invested principal to zero. And now you're in it. So now why won't you hold it? Go deploy your 100K somewhere else, or 50K, or $1 million, whatever you put in. Go somewhere else, but let this asset nurture and develop for you, so that you or your generations can benefit from. I think that model is a very powerful model, but unfortunately, people are still gamblers, right? They like to say my 100K became 500K, and it's a great party conversation.
Yes, it's not sexy. It's not crypto. You didn't make 1,000%. And the reality is, read The Psychology of Money by Morgan Housel. It really, everyone has their own psychology when it comes to money, their own emotions, their own desires, the way they've been brought up. I was a saver. I can save money. I'm really good at it. I don't like spending it on myself. I love spending it on my kids, but I can put money into a deal. I can forget about it for the next 3 years, and then voila. Money comes out. And if you can't do that, it's going to be very hard. But I challenge you, why can't you do that? What's holding you back from doing that? You can change it. And I'm here to tell you, if you want to create true long-term generational wealth, you're going to have to start buying assets, holding those assets, letting them matriculate. Look at Amazon. Back in 1998, you bought Amazon for $10. Oh, you sold it for $30. You made whatever, 300%. But how much money did you leave on the table?
Correct. So Gino, when you're thinking about these things, there's a fine line between holding too long and holding not enough in terms of time. So how do you make that decision? When you said you just got out of your syndication, last syndication, you just sold it. Why not convert it into an infinite return model? Did it not work? Do the investors have pressure?
We just didn't like the market anymore. We're not really big on Kentucky. We were in the Lexington market. Rents are a little soft there. Occupancy rates never go up above 92%. I don't understand it. It's a great market. We were in Louisville as well. We didn't really like that market. We exited that market. It just didn't align with our values. When they start, you know, telling people that they need to take Section 8 housing, that's not for us.
Right.
Not a knock or for against the market. It's just not in alignment. On top of that, most of our resources are in Tennessee. We're vertically integrated, so we're very efficient there. But to answer it specifically, we've sold 8-unit deals where we're like, you know what? We can take all the equity. It's not really worth refinancing this property because if we put too much debt, it's not going to cash flow.
Yeah.
Let's pull all that money out and go repurpose into another asset. I think the other way you can look at it is if a deal becomes functionally obsolescent. We've sold a couple of units, a couple of properties that had that central air. They had those units in the window. So the tenant base is a little bit different. Or if an area starts to decrease in value, median income starts to drop. Those are things we need to look at. Or if the asset's just getting too expensive to maintain, let's fix it up and let's sell it and repurpose it. There's always reasons to sell. I don't want everyone to be here saying, I'm going to buy real estate and hold it forever.
Correct.
Sometimes in part of the market cycle, when you can get an amazing price for your asset and you can exit it, You exit that asset, you put the money aside, wait till the market cycle comes back down as we're witnessing right now. Cash is not trash, Grant Cardone. Cash is key. You got some cash in the sidelines. You can jump on these opportunities right now.
Definitely. Definitely, Gino. Gino, which markets are you in right now? Where in Tennessee are you?
We are in the eastern part of Tennessee. So we're in Knoxville. We love Johnson City. We'd love to buy deals in Chattanooga. We want to be within 3 hours of the Knoxville, Tennessee market. So we're looking even into parts of North Carolina, parts of Alabama. Alabama's an interesting market. Huntsville, and that market has just been on fire.
Huntsville, I think because of the was the FBI quarter there? I can't remember which.
It's white collar. I mean, they have so many white collar jobs there and so many government jobs there. It's amazing. Like, you would not know unless you're in real estate. But unfortunately, all real estate investors know that asset prices are not cheap there.
Correct. So when you're looking into a market, what is your buying criteria?
For us, buying criteria, I'll take Knoxville as an example. We got very fortunate that Jake moved to Knoxville, Tennessee in 2011. Believe it or not, it was the fourth city out of the Great Recession, fourth city out of it. So it was one of those that was emerging. There was a path to progress. We like the fact, as far as buying criteria, that it is landlord friendly. It's not hard to evict a resident, whereas opposed in New York and California, it takes a lot longer. And you're selling time. In multifamily, if it takes you 6 months to get a resident out, you've lost 6 months of revenue. So we don't want to have that obstacle. Jobs coming in. There's a plethora of jobs in Knoxville. So you have the University of Knoxville, University of Tennessee, which is a huge employer. And then you have Rubbermaid, you have Densco, you have a lot of manufacturing. I think one of the gun manufacturers moved down there, Sturm Ruger, moved down.
Okay.
So there's a lot of jobs. So you want a diversity of jobs as well. You don't want to be in this market like Rochester that had Kodak, or even like the Cleveland Clinic that has one major employer. If they decide to pull out, or if you ever get a great recession, they're going to be hurt.
Yeah.
Population growth would be great. Let's get some type of population growth. Also, I would say the affordability of the market. You look at a market like Omaha, Nebraska. Most people will be like, Omaha, to me, is one of my favorite markets. Stable, 1% plus population growth. The affordability to actually rent there is amazing. Great jobs. It's in the middle of the country. Nice people. I love that market. Check that market out. And it's one of those that's sort of under the radar. Tulsa is another market just like that, where they want to incentivize people to come. They're business friendly. They're landlord friendly. These are things that I look at when I'm looking into investing in a market.
Love that. And, you know, do you need to have a local presence when you invest? Because I think part of that problem, that's the biggest problem that people will have, that, well, I live in D.C., while Knoxville is a flight away, but if something happens there, I don't have people there and all that stuff. How do you think about that?
That is a great question. I would answer it by saying that I started my investing journey back in 2008 by buying duplexes in Rochester, New York, and I was living in Westchester, New York. I was living an hour plane ride. And I found it challenging, but what I liked about it was if you can hire a third-party property management and you can understand how to work with them, my problem with that market was I just didn't like the market. It was a lot of Section 8. It was very expensive tax-wise, and I didn't see growth in that market. So I said, you know what? When Jake moved down, he was my boots on the ground, in effect. That's when we partnered. He brought me value from that perspective, and I brought him value from the knowledge and from my balance sheet as well. So if you're going to start out, try to find somebody with boots on the ground. And if you want to go within an hour plane ride, if you're in DC and you want to fly into Knoxville, it's a 45-minute flight, just make sure you understand how to work with third-party property management. Understand that you may have to go there once a month or once every two months, especially in the beginning. It's not doable, as we like to say, but it's more challenging, especially when you're first starting out. But that's why when you join these groups and these communities like Jake and Gino and others, there are people who are boots on the ground. There are people who are operators. Right. There are people who are capital raisers. That's the power of these communities, where you can get together and find who you're aligned with. Because it is challenging in California to invest in California. It's very difficult. If you have
can't find anything.
If you have a significant amount of capital and you're looking for capital appreciation, that's a great market. But I mean, if you don't have a ton of capital and you're looking for cash flow, it's challenging to invest in that market.
No, I love that, Gino. So Gino, are you in Tennessee as well, or are you still in Rochester?
I actually moved from New York 7 years ago. I'm living in St. Augustine, Florida right now. And when I moved, Socket, that was the idea. I was living in New York. I was an hour plane ride to Jacksonville, Florida, an hour and a half. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to start making this my backyard. So when I do move eventually, I'll have a presence. But when I moved down here back in 2017, everyone was telling me I was crazy. Jacksonville is overpriced. Are you nuts? Yes, absolutely. So I'm like, okay, it was 70, 80,000 a unit. Remember, it was North Florida. The boom had not taken place. Correct. And then once jobs in 18 and 19 and the institutions started floating money from South Florida to North Florida, things took off. And I'm like, you know what? We're in Knoxville, because I was actually going to start buying assets down here and expand the property management company down here. But instead of doing that, I'm like, I got Jake up in Knoxville.
Let's might just as well be there.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Perfect. Perfect. Gino, is there, is somebody starting out or they're looking to venture out into diversifying their asset classes, how do you, what do you recommend them to start with?
I would recommend to start for them to start with themselves. I mean, like you said, I loved how you said the path is not for everyone to quit their jobs. And I don't think everyone should quit their jobs.
Yeah.
But you should be getting your money out of the stock market and out of crypto and into something that is a hard asset. And you can start out by being a limited partner in a deal. You can start out by possibly co-GPing and going with the lead sponsor. You can possibly start out by buying a 6 unit. Or as our students have done, you can start out by buying 100 unit plus. You need to understand what your goals are, how much capital you have to work with, what you're trying to accomplish. And you need to learn the business. I mean, you need to learn how to buy right, manage right, finance right. Because if I'm going to invest in a deal with Socket and he's a lead sponsor, I need to understand his business model and if it aligns with what I'm trying to accomplish. Because if I want to put my money with Socket and he's saying, hey, you're going to get your money back in 3 years, but I really don't want to because I'm a high you know, paid attorney. I don't need my money back. I need my money working for me. So all goals are different. Look within. Look to see what you're trying to accomplish and then try to find the strategy or the market that's going to allow you to achieve that. Because why did I pick Rochester back in 08? I was aligned with cash flow, cash flow, cash flow. I need to make $8,000 a month or $10,000 a month to leave my job.
Yeah.
And that was really a newbie mistake. I mean, like the Knoxville market had cash flow, but it also had appreciation because cash flow will get you out of your job. Equity will keep you out of your job. And once I understood,
love that. Love that,
Gina. Both of those together. Yeah, yeah, that's what I was.
It's actually very, very powerful because most people, and I made the same mistake.
We all do.
Of cash flow, cash flow, cash flow. I think there's a balance, right? You know, you don't want to aim for 10xing or 1000xing like in Tesla, because that's a pure gamble and pure luck. And maybe someone is lucky. I'm not that lucky. So I know that for sure. I'm like, that's not the path for me. So I'm going to go after cash flow plus appreciation. Now, we may not be able to take 80%, 100% appreciation, they may be a little bit smaller, but as long as you're holding it long enough, because that compounding effect on the value will outpace, especially with the stability it gives you, is going to outpace anything that you can get in the stock market.
I'll tell you, Saka, the sweet spot for us has been buying assets, working those assets, stabilizing those assets, repositioning, pulling out the equity, crystallizing the equity, putting into the next deal, and letting that deal work over time.
Yeah.
And once you do that, that cash flow snowball begins to become serious. It can begin to become real. And when you've been able to refinance out over $25 million from your portfolio, which are basically loans back to you, that money doesn't go for vacations and for fun. That's why I stayed in my job for 5 years, the restaurant, an additional 5 years before I left, because all the money from the real estate business was getting reinvested back into the real estate business.
Correct.
You know, I left the restaurant in March of 2016. I'd met Jake and we had started partnering in 2011. So it was a total of 5 years that I worked at the restaurant, supporting my lifestyle, paying my bills, being able to, you know, go on loans for deals because I had that W-2 income. But that allowed me to take all of the capital that I earned from the real estate portfolio and continue to put it back into the business.
Love it. Gino, we're coming to the end of our show, man. I think seem like you have so much wisdom and insight, man. I could talk to you for hours and hours and hours. And still won't get everything out of your head.
The wisdom comes from making tons of mistakes and being in the market long enough. So
true.
When you come through 08, you're like, wow, okay. You learn a lot.
and I think but that's the beauty of it. You have to get into the market because if you're going to sit on the sidelines being afraid of the mistakes, you're not learning anything anyways. But if you partner with someone like you or you join a community like yours, Jake and Gina community, the mistakes, the impact of the mistakes is lessened, right? Because you have somebody else to lean on to discuss them and learn from their mistakes, which is what I love about that. Gina, in terms of, let's bring a 20-year-old Gina back, somebody who's listening to this podcast. What's one insight you can share from that with that person that can positively impact their life?
If I'm going to speak to a 20-year-old, if I'm speaking to my 20-year-old self, I sort of don't want to change anything because I
completely agree.
My dad, I met my wife at the restaurant. I mean, it was just part of me. It was my identity. I loved it. What I would have changed differently would have been my spending habits. Did I need the big, beautiful house? Did I make those silly and foolish mistakes with a gentleman named Maserati Mike, where I put my money into a deal and I didn't understand the business? I think that's where I would have gone on. And I would just tell everybody to try to defer your gratification. Whatever money you can afford to put aside, put that money aside, work on your personal development, get a life coach or go into therapy, learn about yourself, learn about what your gifts and your passions and your talents are and work towards those. I think if I had done that, and instead of not hating the restaurant, but finding my gifts and my passions within that business and being able to become an entrepreneur in that space, but then I wouldn't be talking to you right now and I wouldn't have this amazing portfolio and I wouldn't be in Florida. So that changed. But for those of you who are young out there, understand that working W-2 is great, but there's risks in everything in life. Invest in yourself and start buying other assets that you can start putting money into and investing in those assets.
Love that, Gina. Gina, next question, a little bit more abstract. As you think about human interactions that you have had in your past lives, in your life so far, where do you feel is a gap in humanity right now that humanity could evolve?
I mean, the gap in humanity right now is people don't listen to each other. We all want to scream and we all want to be heard. I think you seek first to understand, then to be understood. That is such a hard thing to do. Yeah. That means you need to have humility. That means you need to shed the ego. And when you go online and there's so much cynicism and there's so much hatred online, that's challenging. It's tough out there, but you don't know where that person's coming from. And what's the quote that I always like to use? You know, people... It comes to the point of when you're listening to someone say something about you, are they saying it about you or is it a reflection of how they're feeling?
Definitely.
And then ultimately, how do you take it? Because if I'm going to get off this podcast and my wife makes a comment, I'm in a good mood right now. I may take it differently than as if I just lost $300,000. So having the awareness and the understanding is so important. But like I said, as a leader and as an influencer, you have to gather all of the information and the intel to make an educated decision. That even comes down to buying a real estate deal. Don't assume that the seller's there just wants to get the highest price. They may want to get out of that deal. They may be burned out. They may have inherited it. Whatever it is, understand what's going on with the other side so that you can make, a calculator or an intelligent response to that.
Love that, Gina. Gina, anything we covered in the last 40, 50 minutes that you want to add on to that could add additional value to the listeners?
Yeah, there's so many things that I like to add, but one thing I really want to mention to everybody is you may be listening to Socket, you may be listening to myself and saying, well, yeah, they can do it. I can't do it. And I'll challenge everybody. I was a pizza guy. I didn't have any super skills. I wasn't a financial modeler. I didn't understand a lot of stuff. I learned it. I think anybody can learn the business. And that's why, to me, the power of the Jake and Gino community is unparalleled. All these communities. You see students doing deals, real people doing real deals. And you may say to yourself, well, I'm sitting at home all by myself watching these YouTube videos. I'm educating myself. There's education, and then you need the implementation. And then you also need seeing your peers doing it, talking about a 48-unit deal, talking about a seller finance deal, seeing people do it. And I'm going to be completely honest with you. I'm going to say once again, if a pizza guy and a drug rep can do it, anybody can do it.
Thank you. And I'm no different, right? If as I tell people, every company, every job, every school makes a mistake, and I am everyone's mistake. I didn't belong anywhere. And on paper, I've done everything right. But if I can do it, I think anyone can do it. Because it does. Because I think what I want to say is, we're not creating a Google. We're not creating an Apple. We're not creating a Facebook.
No.
We're taking a model that's been time and tested. Mm-hmm. It's guaranteed to work if you put your effort into it. Guaranteed to work. There's no reason why it will not work. Because we're not innovating. I mean, we may be innovating processes, but the business model is very simple. It's been there here for centuries.
Yes.
Right? So why would we think we're not smart or why we can't do it? I think it's just that you were saying that we come with a limited, with our own baggages. Understanding yourself is very important in that, but the community is way important.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Perfect.
I agree.
Gino, where can people find more about you, learn more about you, maybe get connected with you in your community?
Just go to jakeandgino.com. You know, the website has podcasts. It has our books. It has all the information on there for you to be able to start taking the journey and become curious. Don't be the average person that says apartments, that's only for rich people. Start diving into it. If you're already in the single family space, if you're already a small business owner, you're already in that mindset of becoming a multifamily entrepreneur. That's what becoming and investing in real estate is. It's becoming an entrepreneur. If you look at it from that perspective of not just accumulating a few buildings, but looking at it from systems and processes and really becoming an investor, everything will change for you.
Love it. Gino, thank you again for being on the show, buddy. Really appreciate it. I really enjoyed it. I love these podcasts because you don't know how 40, 50 minutes fly away.
They really do.
So thank you.
Appreciate it. Man. Thank you.
Thank you. Hold on 1 second, Gina.
If you got value from this episode, you might consider sharing this content with a friend. But most importantly, be sure to take action on what you've learned. One way you can take the next step is to connect directly with Socket on an investor call. That link is waiting for you in the show notes below.